Demons Discuss, Take 73, the one with the surprise baby. Welcome to Demons Discuss, the unofficial podcast about the All Souls universe and the topics that orbit it. We are your hosts, Angela, Jean, and Valerie. I'm Valerie. With me is Angela and Jean. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
And I'm just going to let you know that this, we're kind of frankenpiecing this episode together.
We're time walking all over the place.
We're time walking all over the place because, yeah, we have some news. And let's say this portion of this episode was recorded on the 9th of August. So just to keep everybody straight. So, Jean, tell us the news.
Yes, the news. Was it Thursday or Friday now? Our days are all blending together. Finally got an announcement from Sky. We will be getting season 2 of A Discovery of Witches in the UK sometime in January. They gave us a month. This is big progress. We also got a follow-up announcement from Shudder and Sundance Now that they will be making their announcements shortly.
They hope that it's good. Well, not they hope. They said that it'll be shortly after the UK premiere.
Yes, that too. So whatever shortly after means, you got that. And also, well, disregard, but don't disregard our save it for the show on this episode. We had that spooky feeling, but we didn't know how to handle it. Apparently, we should have consulted the magic eight ball, and we didn't. So, demons are sometimes right. Demons are sometimes wrong.
And it kind of dovetails with the UK DVD release, correct?
I think so. Yeah.
I think so. Yeah.
For as much as you can rely on Amazon, Amazon UK has a release date on that sometime in March.
Yeah. So it's all coming together, people.
So maybe the UK is going to get an early January release if they're talking the end of March and we've got 10 episodes because they're not going to release the DVD before they burn off the episodes. Pretty much a given. So
I do want to point out because some people have taken it this way and I'm not ruling it out. It is still a possibility. But when you see Jan 21, that is January 2021, not January 21st of 2021. Mm. As we know so far.
That's important.
Well, yeah. And then we also had to run into that other little issue with that because they had season 2 and people like skipped right over the period and thought it was a European January 2nd.
Oh, geez.
Oh.
Yes. It's like, no. There's a period there, folks.
Okay, so I'm just going to say that with our coverage of the TV show, we are going to maintain, like we did last time, we are going to follow the US release. So if it comes out on Sundance Now and Shudder first, we will go with that and we will produce our episodes weekly after the full release. I don't know how that's going to work out with AMC and all of that.
Oh, you're talking about the streaming. I'm sorry. I was going to say full release. It's like, are we going to wait until all 8 episodes are over? But I see what you're saying.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. The stream. Well, they dump all the episodes all at once. That's for the true. Streaming.
True.
I don't know if I want to use last time as a guide because it seemed like by the time we were done covering all the episodes, AMC, hey, revival.
You know?
Yes. And we're doing it all over again. So we're just going to go with Shudder and Sundance Now. As soon as it's available in the US and Canada is when we're going to release our episodes. Reviewing those episodes. We got 10 episodes this time?
Yes, we've got 10 episodes this time. And we've got at least a 4-month span that we can like start delving into new folks' old stuff, which I started already.
Yay!
I was looking for something to watch and realized I never watched Victoria and got totally sucked in last night.
Oh.
Yeah. Kids going to be a real interesting issue to watch unfold with the TV audience.
Shortly go down this tangent. I watched Victoria before I knew of him. So now I might have to go back and revisit. I do love Rufus Sewell. So he's always a bonus.
He's just wonderful. I'm 4 episodes in. I love him. And it's like, of course, my light bulb went on. It's like, oh, that's Carolyn Lamb's husband.
Yes, exactly. Don't you do the automatic Lord Byron. Oh my God, I feel so terrible for you.
It's like, oh, dude.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
A Discovery of Witches season 3 news as well. It's not really news, but Teresa Palmer did say she's going back to Cardiff in a few days, and they're going to say, quote, hello to A Discovery of Witches season 3. So that's mm-hmm. happening cool. around the yeah. corner.
So it looks wow. like shooting in September, maybe?
Yeah. And then she was on Sunrise Australia, and we have a clip on Twitter and a clip on Instagram of their 50-page COVID document that they have to follow when they're filming. So it should be interesting. I know people are already have angst, like how are they not going to have romantic scenes and how are they not going to touch? And I'm sure it's all going to be worked out very safely.
Yeah, there's probably going to be a lot of isolation. They're going to live in a bubble, basically. It's yeah. how they're trying to do contact sports. So they're just going to live in a bubble until the shooting yeah. is
all
over.
That testing and tracking that doesn't seem to be happening here.
Yeah.
Well, even someone from the NBA said, you know, we can test till the cows come home, but it doesn't matter if someone gets it and spreads
cause,
it.
Yeah, because yeah. everybody's asymptomatic until yeah, mm-hmm. you're tested anyways. And you're not. But we digress.
Yes,
we digress. We're going to put you back on track on the normal episode.
Enjoy.
And we're going to say goodbye.
Goodbye. Mini demon kiss.
What are we talking about today, Jean?
Chapter 5.
Yay!
We get to go up into the round tower. No smoking allowed.
Uh-oh.
And root around in all the paperwork. Fun times.
There's secrets.
Lots of secrets. And Marcus climbing the walls, literally.
And jumping.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, let's take this time to thank our sponsors. Let's just do that.
All right.
The sponsors are listeners just like you listeners. We know it's tough times out there right now. We know it.
Woo-wee.
Woo. So we appreciate the love and resources we get from our most loyal followers. They help us sustain the podcast, and it keeps it ad-free.
Yay!
And we know you all appreciate our silliness not being interrupted by an ad for products you guys are most likely not interested in. I mean, you all know where to get toothbrushes and razors and mattresses, so there's no need.
No.
But we still have to pay our bills in order to keep the show going. So, Angela, please tell our potential patrons, what's in it for them?
We have a patron-exclusive after show produced on our off week. So if you're a patron, you can get us every week, our public show 1 week, and then our exclusive patron after show the following week. It has various topics, or sometimes it's extended discussions. So sometimes we say, let's just talk about that in the after show. And then we dish a little bit more.
Sometimes we forget, though.
This is true. But there are various levels that you can give, and depending on the level, depends on the swag that goes along with it and the reward level. Last but not least, we have the Demon Roulette, or Roulette as we like to call it.
Demon Roulette!
Yeah, everyone, regardless of your level, gets entered into this drawing, and you win a fabulous prize at random.
Absolutely. Randomly.
Very
it's great.
Random.
I play game show music. It's fun for me, too. Yay! I love it. So if you guys are interested in that, go to patreon.com/demonsdiscuss. $2 is all you need to get the after show. And I've been getting a lot of comments. They'll say, hey, I like your show, but I really love the after show. And I'm like, whoa, what?
Why?
The after show. I mean, I'm like, we spent all this time preparing for the public show. The after show, we're just kind of like, wow, let's talk about this. Wah!
Right.
It's hilarious. Anyway.
Well, glad they like it, though.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, worth your $2, right? All right, so let's head into discussor emails. Who wants to go?
I will. I have one from Chloe.
Hey, Chloe.
Hey, Chloe.
She says, hi, demons. Australia's chugging along, except for Victoria. Almost back to normal, and my life hasn't really changed that much. On to the chapter.
All right.
After 2 days with Baldwin in residence at Set Tour, I not only understood why Matthew had built a tower onto the house, wished he had located another province, if not another country. Baldwin is acting like Lord of the Manor, or at least attempting to. He has tried to control a family that refuses to let him bully them. When Blood Rage finally came out to everyone, I was surprised. Before this book, I assumed everyone knew about the Blood Rage that infected Matthew.
Me too.
Me too. When you see the consequences for Matthew's disease laid bare, you understand why he kept it a secret. The biggest shock was Isabeau's story. I was not prepared when I first read this book for what happened to her and how dark the third book was getting so early. I agree. 100%.
Yep, for sure.
She closes with, I love this book most out of the three because I love the escalation, the tensions, and the science. Can't wait to hear from you again, demons. Stay safe, stay sane, stay relatively sober. Your vampire down under, Chloe.
Oh, thank you, Chloe.
Thank you.
Jean, what do you have?
I have something from the Barbara Files. It's a long one, so I'm going to like kind of hop around on it. The Barbara Files. Hi, darling demon divas. Wow, that's a hard one.
Alliteration at its best.
Yes. Well, chapter 5, Nathaniel, Sophie, and Margaret were the first to get the fuck out of Dodge. Do you think Marcus gave them another one of his cars or maybe one of Matthew's? Or did he just call them a taxi to get them to the airport?
Yeah.
I think they were GD VIPs myself.
Oh, yeah. Helicopter.
Took the helicopter to them. That's just my guess.
Yeah.
Baldwin making his list, checking it twice, deciding who's naughty and nice.
That's hilarious.
Oh, she's got some really good, like, 50, what's my line and I got a secret. We'll save that for later on after our chapter.
So okay.
We can have an informed opinion in this. And then she goes on to say, it was interesting that Isabel used the word Lamia to describe what her sire was trying to achieve. Jean, correct me if I was wrong, please. Lamia was a queen of Libya who was loved by Zeus. When Hera, Zeus's wife, found out, she killed Lamia's children and cursed her, transforming her into a monster that fed on the blood of children. Pretty fucking gruesome. Well, actually, Barbara, if you take a look at it, it's Lamia with a small L, and it just basically means female vampire in Greek. Deb straightened us out on that.
Yeah.
We went round and round in that. It just means female vampire. It's not related to the Shelley. Is it Shelley or Byron poem? I should know this. I wrote a term paper on it called Lamia. It's not related to that. It's not related to the Queen of Libya. That's certainly not one of...
It's just a generic Lamia.
Yeah.
It's a generic Lamia. And the interesting thing about that story also plays into Lucy Westerna, the character from Dracula, who was engaged to a lord and was Mina's best friend and was turned into a vampire who fed on babies. The more you know.
Yeah.
In my half-assed summary of Dracula.
They sound nice.
Yes.
Yeah.
So anyways, I just rolled all the way down. I hate that when that happens. And she says, on that note, I had better quit. As ever, thank you for your unstoppable talent and outrageous sense of humor. Be safe, stay healthy, and look to the stars. Peace and love, Barbara. Thank you, Barbara.
Thanks, Barbara.
Thanks, Barbara. Woo!
Yeah, and that's part of the danger of being able to remember posts from 5 years ago.
Yeah. No, but keep them coming, Barbara, Barbara.
Keeps us fresh, too.
Yeah, joke.
I do remember when Deb said it's lowercase L, we're like, oh, yeah, it is.
Yeah. Oh, you right.
Okay. And I just Googled it.
Yeah, people still wanted to argue about it after Deb said it's lowercase.
But
that doesn't fit with my theory.
Yeah, no. Yeah. So mine is kind of a partial email. I split it in two because she sent us a nice long one.
Uh-huh.
So the first part of this email I'm going to save for housekeeping.
Okay.
But the meat of it I'm going to read here. I'm going to read the whole thing because she's a first-time discusser.
Yay!
Well, first time actually writing in. She's been a discusser for a while, but she, you know, took the plunge and wrote us an email. So, on with discussing. And thank you, Crystal, for this. See below for this enormous, juicy chapter discussion. Okay, she went all over it. All right, so, first topic, Baldwin's rule over Septor. I was never on Team Baldwin until Angela and Jean convinced me.
You mean wore you down.
A.K.A. wore me down. Now I don't know how I missed it. Though he's acting like a complete ego-driven male with his I am the Lord of the Manor routine, it's no surprise that he has a fandom of hatred on his head. Okay, so next topic is scions. Oh, Galaglass, you really do know how to stick yourself in the thick of it, even though you don't do it on purpose. Or do you? You just let it slip out about Hugh starting a scion.
I think that whole branch of that whole scion of the family has that habit, and I think Hugh may prove to have it too once we meet him.
Something Marcus knew nothing about. You sly fox. Okay. And then Marcus finding out about this family secret. Oh, those damn family secrets. But how cool, slant horrifying,
is it to have a family archive? I often wonder what other goodies might turn up in mine if they existed. Don't we all have them? Though most of ours don't contain an oubliette.
True.
Rereading and waiting for the explosion that was going to happen was really different this time. The phrase, "Hi," Marcus waved happily, was exquisite knowing what was going to be coming. Oh, what's about to go down? You're right. Mm-hmm. All right. The devastation of Marcus realizing what had actually happened to his children in New Orleans was so sad. Marcus saying, "You told me I was a failure, a disgrace to the family." That just breaks my heart. Mine too. Come on, Matthew. You could have done better there.
Anyway. That was definitely a do better moment for him.
Mm-hmm. Philippe wanting Matthew to kill Marcus too. Well, I get so torn about our grand lion. Sometimes he seems so callous and unfeeling, but there's always a reason behind it and why Philippe forgave Matthew for disobeying him. Philippe knew what it was to love someone too much to see him perish unjustly. So, hey, that's what saved you, Marcus. So chill out. Anyway, that was my add-in. Crystal didn't write that. That was me. Okay, so the de Clermont family tree and the Benjamin erasure. Did you guys catch this? I never did before. When Diana was reviewing the de Clermont family tree with Sarah, each bubble contained a name. Some were familiar to me. Hugh, Baldwin, Godfrey, Matthew, Varen, Freya, Stasia. Many were not. Many were not. What? Who do we have coming yet? I don't know.
There's always more.
Mm-hmm. There's always more. That's what Deb always says. There's always more.
Peter.
Yeah. Peter. That's Peter, right.
That's true.
Okay. So Marcus wants to know who's Benjamin. Shivers I had. I admit losing a smidge of respect for Isabeau when she uttered, "Benjamin does not exist." So old school. I don't like this. Therefore, we deny it and don't talk about it. And it never happened. Isabeau, you can do better. Do better, Isabeau. That's what Crystal says.
Yes. Great minds think alike.
Right. Did we ever really consider the fact that Benjamin's original human duplicity in being able to trade the de Clermont family secrets was only possible because hot mess Matthew and spilled the family tea on him already, then not being content with just killing Benjamin, he wanted him to suffer. And if we're honest, suffer fairly cruelly and brutally. Yeah, this is true. Matthew is no angel. Mm-mm, no, he should have just killed him. Why?
Right.
Because we wouldn't have a story. That's why. Mm-hmm. So Isabeau's story, even rereading it now, I never expected this. I must say, she reminds me a bit of Darla from Buffyverse. Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
I never thought of that. Yeah. The way that Isabeau survives is a testament to her strength and inner true north. Huge respect for her when describing her torture and rape by her brothers and sire, with everything that was done to me stemmed from a morbid curiosity to see what might finally tame me. But I was fast and smart. My sire began to think I might be useful to him after all. What a way to say that despite being shoved down into the mud, I continue to push myself up again and again and again. So, and the child that Philippe knew about. What vampire baby? Matthew's voice echoed through the room like a gunshot. And the subsequent story is so scary for Diana and the babe. And then Sarah being the voice of reason, lowering the temperature in the room. I wasn't expecting that. I love when characters act differently from what we expect. Yeah. I do, too. And then she says, why on earth didn't Philippe tell Matthew and Diana about the potential issue of vein feeding rather than breastfeeding? So the plans for the future. Phoebe. I really grew to love Phoebe a lot in this chapter. Her consistent showing of cool-headedness. I need me a supply of that. And being her own womanness was so refreshing after all the hot mess routines we've been through. I agree. I will stay here with Marcus, Phoebe said, her chin rising. Chin rising. I do so love that fuck you at it. And then Marcus, when he says, I haven't forgiven you to Matthew, and then lists out his demands and says that then he will offer him his allegiance, not only as my father, but as my sire. Tears. Huzzah. Anyway, I promise to strive to be a better wannabe vampire, but coming to terms with the realization that I'm a demon. Lots of love and around on me, Crystal. Thank you, Crystal.
Thank you, Crystal. Crystal.
That was a good breakdown. Yeah. I don't think we need to record anymore.
Yeah. Right. I'm going swimming.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. All right. So on that note, let's start the wagon. This chapter discussion is brought to us by Sarah Dye. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you.
So when we left off in chapter 4, we were in the temple with Isabeau and Diana. After Diana had shared Philippe's letter with Isabeau, Isabeau offered her some wise words to carry forward with. Remember that in the difficult days to come, as the darkest de Clermont family secrets are exposed to light, remember that you will show them all that you are Philippe de Clermont's daughter in more than name. So we open up chapter 5 and we find a rather disgruntled Diana suffering Baldwin's presence. What did you guys think of this? Where were you on this with her attitude and everything?
I was going to say, at first read, I was happy Baldwin was even there. I mean, I had to go the whole book without him.
Right.
I was like, oh, he's here. Yeah.
You know, and I get it with Diana and the who does he think he is? Who is he? Who is he? He's the head of the fucking family. Yeah. And now you're seeing what that looks like. You know,
yeah, this he's lived it. In this house since before this house has been here, bitch.
I wasn't going to go that far, but okay, no, Gene.
But think about it. Where Septuors is in France is most likely where he was made, because he was made right after the Battle of Alesia, which was part of the Gallic Wars in the Auvergne. Excuse me. Angela, you can say it. Auvergne.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's been his stomping grounds a hell of a lot longer than it's been hers. Her attitudes, and Matthew's for that matter. So her attitude of entitlement was a little bit annoying.
She's all in her feelings. That's, you know, you know how it is when you get in your feelings and fuck everybody else.
Yeah. I mean, and it's rough because this family was created because of Philippe and Isabeau. And, you know, when Philippe met his demise, you know, the next in line was Baldwin. You don't, that respect doesn't automatically get transferred. Yes, it has to be earned, but by vampire custom and law, it is what it is, you know, and he is the head of the family.
It's the progression of things. Yeah.
And Diana's been around for what? All of 9 months now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The other thing about it is, too, it doesn't help matters that he and Isabeau are always sniping.
Locking horns.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, Isabeau is consistently undermining his authority.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah.
And I'd really love to know the backstory and all that, because it's kind of a weird situation.
It is. So Baldwin is having Alain meet with him daily. The mayor's meeting with him. He's overseeing Mart's work. Obviously, Mart can do no wrong. So, you know, he's like grudgingly saying, yeah, okay.
Well, yeah, Diana thinks he's grudgingly. You know, that's her observation. Her adverb.
Right.
And he enters adverbs.
He enters rooms without knocking, because that's normal for him. And the family, might I point out.
And the lack of doors.
Yes. I think Diana's problem is that she's seeing in real time what it is to be the head, but I think she's taking it hard because Philippe, he did the same thing.
Yeah.
He really did. It's just that she accepted it more from him. Do you know?
Yeah.
I think she was more intimidated by Philippe because Matthew was intimidated and respectful and in awe of Philippe. And as for Baldwin, he was always... All she ever saw from Matthew and Isabeau was they were dismissive of him. So she figured, okay, I can go ahead and go right down that path too.
He held Philippe to reverence, you know, and Baldwin never got that from him. Mm-hmm. So there's the difference.
Yeah.
Nathaniel and Sophie leave to go to Australia with Agatha to show solidarity and, you know, keep it under the radar that they're actually working against the congregation, which is smart, you know.
Yeah, very. The fact that Phoebe kind of had to step in and argue that, Marcus, this is the good plan. This is the plan that needs to be done. And then Diana, of course, here we go.
Right.
Like, sticking nose where it doesn't belong.
Right.
As usual.
And Nathaniel didn't help with this because he wanted to fight, you know, and he had to stop it.
Right. You know, I think he had FOMO. He didn't want to miss out on anything going on.
So Phoebe stepped in and backed Baldwin because she's thinking logically.
And she's also protecting her guy's back.
And Marcus was also worried about Margaret's safety. And he doesn't need to become another Matthew because Margaret's gone. He'd regret that forever.
Well, not only it's like Phoebe's also smart enough to look at him and go, dude, your plate's already full. You don't need that. There's a place that we can put them. It can be taken care of. The diplomacy she learned watching her dad. It's like,
be smart about this, Marcus.
I mean, it's also tactician. Like Baldwin, thinking 10 steps ahead. If I do this, what good and bad is going to happen consequence-wise down the line? And it was to her favor.
Mm-hmm. From reading this passage, I think Diana, she was kind of like looking to jump in and challenge, but Phoebe's expression, this is from Diana, Phoebe's expression warned me that if I had a different opinion on the matter, I can keep it to myself. So that ends that discussion, right? They're all in the castle, and Diana describes, we all found hideaways where we could retreat for some much needed peace and quiet. So it was something of a surprise when Isabeau burst into Matthew's study with an announcement about Marcus's present work. about.
Oh, look, somebody else busting in.
I know, like, she did not.
But that's okay. Yeah, but that's okay. Yeah.
She takes it from certain people. It's like me. I don't like people getting close to me. I have like a bubble. Certain people, I'm fine with you entering my bubble. Other people, I'll hold my arm out. So I think Diana's doing that mentally with the people in the house, where she's like, no, I don't like you.
And the funny thing is, it's like, unless you entirely agree with her, she doesn't like you.
And that's nature, though. That's us. I mean, Diana's foibles, that is so us in a way. It's like, I can take something from somebody I like way better than I can take something from someone I don't like. And I forgive her a little bit in that.
It's human nature.
It is human nature. So,
and it's also like such a girl thing to fall in love with a guy and let him influence your opinions instead of making your own.
Mm-hmm. Have we learned from this, ladies? Learn a lesson.
Learn a lesson.
Okay, so Isabeau says, Marcus is in the round tower with Sarah. And at this point, we're like, okay, why does that mean anything to us? Phoebe and Hamish are with them. They found the old family pedigrees. Diana's like, I couldn't imagine why this news had Matthew flinging down his pen and leaping from his chair.
You're about to find out.
When Isabeau caught my curious look, she gave me a sad smile in return. Marcus is about to find out one of his father's secrets, Isabeau explained. And that got me moving, too. Hey, yeah, I'm there, sure, Diana, you're figuring out that Matthew has a lot of secrets, and this is one you can learn. Okay. We go on, and they get to the round tower, and there's an oubliette there. Whoops. So they're rushing, and they pass an oubliette, letting us know that, yes, Septur has them.
They were all the rage back then.
Yeah, that was one of those trendy accessories Matthew put in all of them.
The revolting an oubliettes.
Yeah, like a garden tub in the 80s.
It's a must-have feature. Oh, God. Our granite countertops now. Jesus. Yes. Anyway, don't get me started. Great. Anyway, Matthew goes on to explain Philippe built it for a prison. He seldom used it. No big deal. He said seldom. He didn't say never.
Right. No. Yeah.
And Diana assures him, go, we'll be right behind you. So the oubliette in the round tower's ground floor was a place of forgetting, but the tower's second floor was a place of remembering. It was stuffed with boxes, papers, documents, and artifacts. This must be de Clermont family archives.
One of them.
Yeah, one of them. No wonder Emily spent so much time up here. And this is Sarah. She was a genealogy nut. And then Marcus. Hi! He waved happily from a high catwalk that circled the room and supported still more boxes and stacks.
See, now you picture surfer dude Marcus going, hi. Now you can picture Ed doing, hi.
Hi. Yeah. Hey, guys.
Just as long as he's not in that leopard print slip.
God. The dire revelations that Isabeau feared apparently hadn't happened yet. Hamish was about to come and get you. It was still from Marcus. And then Marcus vaulted over the catwalk railing and landed softly next to Phoebe. With no ladder or staircase in sight, there was no way to get to that level of storage except to climb using the rough stones for handholds. And no way to get down except to jump. Vampire security at its finest. So that's, I mean, unless you have another vampire break in there.
I was going to say vampire security against humans, demons, and witches. Well, maybe not even witches.
Well, right. Or a human who likes to wall climb.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not that secure, Diana.
Okay, so Matthew says, what are you looking for? And Marcus says, a way to get Baldwin off our backs, of course, Marcus said. He handed a worn notebook to Hamish. There you go, Godfrey's notes on vampire law. So Hamish turns the pages, clearly searching for some useful piece of legal information. The explanation here is Godfrey had been the youngest of Philippe's three male children, known for his formidable and devious intellect. A sense of forbidding began to take root. And Matthew says, and you have found it? And he's glancing down at the scroll.
Oh, fuck. He's a better lawyer than I ever was. We're in trouble now.
And Marcus is like, come and see. Yay.
Yay.
Sarah's like, you'll love this, Diana. Marcus says it's a de Clermont family tree. It looks really old. And I mean, I picture Sarah, she's like, it looks old. Diana will love it. It's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's all good. It's old.
And Diana says, it is. Okay. And 12th century French in the style of workshop in Saint-Sever. Okay. Phoebe said, confirming my sense of the age of the work. It all started when I complained to Galaglass about Baldwin's interference. Okay, we're back to Marcus. He told me that Philippe was nearly as bad, and when Hugh got fed up, he struck out on his own with Fernando, Marcus explained. Galaglass called their family a scion and said sometimes scions were the only way to keep the peace. And then a look of suppressed fury on Matthew's face.
Uh-oh.
Damn you, Galaglass.
Jesus, Galaglass, you gotta open your big mouth. This is foreshadowing of him opening his big mouth when he shouldn't again.
He's always opening his damn mouth.
Yep.
Which explains why he often just jets off and goes on a road trip. I would too.
I gotta shut up for a while.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, that's hilarious. I remembered reading something about science back when Grandfather hoped I would turn to law and take on Godfrey's old duties, Marcus said. Found it, said Hamish. Okay, and I'll read.
Why does everybody think being the family lawyer is punishment, for God's sake? This is really starting to wear on my nerves.
Why?
Yeah, I don't see anything bad.
Yeah.
No, I'm just saying the way everybody's like, oh, I don't want to be the lawyer. That's what's working on my nerves.
You're taking it personally,
right?
Though.
Yeah. He just wanted to be,
Matthew
right.
doesn't want to be the lawyer. Marcus doesn't want to be the lawyer. No. Nobody wants Godfrey stop.
Marcus is a natural healer. He had to be the doctor.
Right.
True. But yeah. Still.
Yeah.
Jobs must be filled.
That's right. Somebody's got to do it.
And people have been dodging this one since 1668.
Yeah, that's true.
This is my point. Surely somebody would have taken it over by now.
Any male with full-blooded children of his own can establish a scion, provided he has the approval of his sire and the head of his clan. The new scion will be considered a branch of the original family, but in all other ways, the new scion's sire shall exercise his will and power freely. That sounds straightforward enough, but since Godfrey was involved, there must be more to it.
There's always a catch.
There's always more. Forming a scion, a distant branch of the de Clermont family under your authority, will solve all of our problems. Marcus is like,
see, Marcus, this is why you should have stuck with the law a little bit longer.
See, if there was a second
time, this is the second time it's bitten him in the ass not paying attention. The first time not paying attention bit him in the ass was with the congregation and him counting his votes without knowing what they were. Pay attention in political science, Marcus.
I do agree. There should have been a de Clermont well before this that should have taken the position. But also,
I should have taken the bar.
There would be no need for Hamish.
No, there wouldn't.
So
not all clan leaders welcome scions, Marcus, and this is Matthew. And Marcus is like, once a rebel, always a rebel. You know how I do. Come on, Daddy. You knew it when you made me. And then Matthew's like, and Phoebe? Does your fiance share your revolutionary sentiments? She might not like the idea of being cast out of Septour without a penny after all your assets are seized by your uncle. And I'm like thinking, Marcus is thinking, oh, wait, what?
Whoa, back up the bus here. See, I didn't read the fine print, son.
See, and Diana wouldn't care either. And so that's why Matthew holds on for dear life, because he knows what really could happen.
Right. Yeah. Marcus says, what do you mean? Pulling an Angela. And Matthew explains, Hamish can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the next section of Godfrey's book lays out the penalties associated with establishing a scion without your sire's permission. Marcus is like, but you're my sire. And Matthew, you didn't explain this to him too?
I mean, come on.
Matthew says, only in the biological sense. I provided you with my blood so you can be reborn a vampire. And you know how I detest the term sire used in that context. I consider myself your father, not your blood donor. I'm asking you to be more than that. This is Marcus. Baldwin was wrong about the covenant and wrong about the congregation. If you establish a scion, we can chart our own path, make our own decisions. That revolutionary in him. I love it. We can do this. That's so firmly American.
Yes, it's so
we can
so
do it. Yeah,
enchantingly naive.
Yes. Hamish asks, is there some problem with you establishing your own Cyan map? Now that Diana's pregnant, I would think you'd be eager to get out from under Baldwin's thumb. And Matthew's like, it's not as simple as you think. And Baldwin may have reservations. And then Sarah's like, I don't know. Sarah's in her own world.
Right.
Okay. Can we like time out right here?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Was anyone else's reaction like, holy shit, Matthew's being the voice of reason here. He's thinking things ahead.
One of the rare times he does. But that hadn't occurred to me, but you're right.
Correct. Oh my God, he's the one not being a hot mess for a change.
I know, yeah. But I think it all goes, and I'm sure there's more motivation, but it goes back to the sentence, being cast on a set tour without a penny and all of your assets being seized by Baldwin. That's his primal instinct.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, he's the one that's like, come on, folks, reel it in, back up the bus here.
You really want to be a broke vampire out there? Life's going to change considerably. Yeah. I mean,
life ain't easy out there for a pimp.
It's hard out here being a pimp, y'all.
I'm like, and we know this? How?
Okay, so back to Sarah in her own world. What's this, Phoebe? And her fingers pointed to a rough patch and the parchment under Matthew's name. She was more interested in the genealogy than the legal complexities. And then Phoebe took a closer look. It's an erasure of some sort.
Dun, 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 dun.
There used to be another roundel there, but I can almost make out the name. It must be Benjamin. They've used common medieval abbreviations and substitute an I for a J. They scratched out the circle, but forgot to get rid of the little red line that connects them to Matthew. Based on that, this Benjamin is one of Matthew's children.
Damn.
Sarah's like, wow. The mention of Benjamin's name made my blood run cold. Matthew did have a son of that name. He was a terrifying creature. Okay, did you guys get the, from Shadow of Night, did you guys get the impression that he was terrifying to Diana?
No,
or just odd?
Very banal. It was like the banality of evil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Average.
I didn't see that he was terrifying to her at the time.
No, and we only heard it from Matthew.
Yeah, the terrifying part was Matthew's reaction.
Yeah, that's it. So Phoebe unrolled another scroll. This looks to be from a century later, Phoebe said. And there's no erasure on this one and no mention of a Benjamin either. He just disappears without a trace. So this is the official copy, guys.
People need to get rid of their drafts. Jesus Christ. Why do you save draft? You never save a draft.
You see a big recycle bin with medieval parchment going through the shredder.
Yes.
We're going to shred this, guys. Who's Benjamin? Asked Marcus. Oh, shit. Here we go.
Strap in, people.
Isabel's like, Benjamin doesn't exist. Oh. And is that why his name is erased? Phoebe asks. Did someone make a mistake? And then Matthew says, yes, he was a mistake. Whoops.
Oopsie.
But Benjamin does exist, I said. And this is Diana meeting Matthew's gray green eyes. They were shuttered and remote. I met him in 16th century Prague. And Hamish wants to know, is he alive now? And Matthew says, I don't know. I thought he was dead shortly after I made him in the 12th century. Hundreds of years later, Philippe heard of someone who fits Benjamin's description, but he dropped out of sight again before we can make sure. There were rumors of Benjamin in the 19th century, but I never saw any proof. So
here's the thing. They kind of skipped over the whole thing that was mentioned at the end of Shadow of Night, because don't forget that Galaglass told the story that when they killed Vlad the Impaler, that he saw Benjamin and scared the crap out of him and said, you need to not hang out with these Bathory people or your head off too.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So
that's true.
Yeah, right now this whole exchange isn't terribly helpful. I mean, we know that Diana just says his madness was unfathomable, even though we don't know how she knows that unless it's through the exchange of the witch's kiss.
Right.
But they're just going, is he dead? Is he not dead? But they don't know that it's really bad or not.
Yeah.
It's true.
They're just kind of going, I don't know.
There's kind of like a editing gap here.
Yeah.
Like a continuity gap.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, how do you know he's terrifying? How do you know he's mad?
And Matthew's vague answers is not helpful.
Yeah. Right. He hasn't gotten to the point where he's going to finally recount his history.
Yeah.
And how he got here.
So Marcus is like us. I don't understand.
Thank you.
Even if he's dead, but Benjamin should appear in the genealogy. And then Matthew says, I disavowed him. So did Philippe. Just as creatures can be made part of your family with a blood vow, he can be formally cast out to fend for himself without a family or the protection of vampire law. You know how important a pedigree is among vampires, Marcus. Not having an acknowledged bloodline is as serious a stain among vampires as being spellbound is for the witches. So Diana thinking, it was becoming clear to me why Baldwin might not want me included in the de Clermont family tree as one of Philippe's children. Well, Baldwin's not an issue here, Diana. So
yeah, Diana, let's focus. This is, for once, this isn't about you.
Focus!
Yeah. Although this comment of Matthew's makes me wonder about things that we find out in Times Convert about other people's sires and whatnot and backgrounds as far as vampires go. Put a pin in that.
Yeah, put a pin in that. We'll go. Hamish said, so Benjamin is dead. Legally, at least. And then Isabel's like, and the dead sometimes rise to haunt us, you know.
Kind of like Olivia Newton-John's husband.
Just, I mean, she's making passing comments like, oh, sometimes they rise to haunt us. Oh, well, you know, it's like, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what Benjamin did to make you turn away from your own blood, Matthew. And this is Marcus, and he's only thinking of his childhood, his vampire childhood. He sounded confused. I was a holy terror in my early years, and you didn't abandon me. And Matthew goes on to explain, Benjamin was one of the German crusaders who marched with Count Emicho's army towards the Holy Land. When they were beaten in Hungary, he joined up with my brother Godfrey's forces. Benjamin's mother was the daughter of a prominent merchant in the Levant, and he had learned some Hebrew, even Arabic, because of the family's business operations. He was a valuable ally at first.
Yes. Now here's the thing about Count Emicho. Mm-hmm. They were the first massacre of the Jews in the Crusades. It was called the Rhineland Massacre, and they basically killed all the Jews in their path and took their property and raped their women, and they weren't pleasant people, which is why they were disbanded and Benjamin sort of snuck his way into Godfrey's forces.
They sound nice. Anyway.
Yeah, they sound nice.
Which makes you think, and I'm going to go back to Shadow of Night, what makes you think, what was he doing in Jewish town? And why was Rabbi Lowe friendly to him? Maybe he didn't know this, or...
I'm sure Rabbi Lowe did not know that.
Yeah.
And I would think, having been a human raised in the Levant, that he was back and forth between the Holy Land and Prague and Berlin and wherever for centuries. And the other interesting thing is, too, is the Draculesti, it gets weird because they were always fighting against the Turks. They were always fighting for Christianity, but they kind of remind me more of a more evangelical branch, shall we say, even more so than the mainstream Catholic Church at the time. So, I mean, there was probably a big streak of bigotry and probably sociopathic behavior with Benjamin before he even crossed paths with me.
He didn't sound like a good guy anyway. No.
Yeah. No.
So Sarah's confused. She's like, so Benjamin was Godfrey's son? What's going on here? And Matthew's like,
Sarah's so funny.
No, he was mine. Benjamin began to trade in de Clermont family secrets. He swore he would expose the existence of creatures, not just vampires, but witches and demons.
How was he finding out the Clermont family secrets is what I want to know.
Loose lips, dude.
Who was flapping their gums to him to begin with?
Was Galaglass around him?
No, Galaglass. I don't think Galaglass was made yet.
Mm-mm. I don't know.
Quite yet. So we can't blame that on
someone Galaglassian with a loud fucking mouth.
it's what's so weird is kind of like Matthew won't tell Diana shit, but he's telling this human messenger type intermediary guy all this stuff. It makes no sense to me.
I don't know. Was it Matthew or was it Godfrey? And what it was happening? I mean, did they promote him to get too close in the ranks in Godfrey's forces, and that's how he found out? But then Matthew tried to solve the problem with his solutions.
For God's sake, he's a family assassin. Why didn't you just assassinate him?
Yeah,
yeah.
That's my big question. question.
It's a real head scratcher here.
So I don't know that it was Matthew spilling the beans. I think it was more somewhere in Godfrey's ranks that it happened. But Matthew just tried to solve the
whisper,
problem.
Little, you know, heading around in the ranks.
Yeah, all the stuff that everybody got upset with Kit at, flipping around in the purse. This guy clearly found the combination to a safe somewhere.
I mean, and it could well be not just one person. Benjamin could be somebody who pays attention and somebody lets a little thing slip and somebody else, and you just put it all together.
He had his own agenda. He was.
All right. So not just vampires, but witches and demons to the humans in Jerusalem. When I discovered his betrayal, I lost control. Philippe dreamed of creating a safe haven for all of us in the Holy Land, a place where we can live without fear. Benjamin had the power to crush Philippe's hopes, and I had given him that power. So Diana says, I knew my husband well enough to imagine the depth of his guilt and remorse. So Marcus is asking what we all are asking. Why didn't you just kill him then? You know, why?
Right.
And Matthew, being the guy he is, he wanted to torture the dude because he was angry. He was mad. So death was too quick. Mm-hmm. I wanted to punish Benjamin for being a false friend. I wanted him to suffer as we creatures suffered. I wanted him a vampire. So if he exposed the De Clermonts, he would have to expose himself.
Matthew's projecting, though. Just because he's tortured as a vampire doesn't mean everyone's tortured as a vampire.
Some people like it.
No. Yeah, most. It seems to be popular for most folks, actually.
And I hate to say, Benjamin is doing Philippe's exact advice, thinking staying alive. He's an unsavory person, but he does things to stay alive, and they are unsavory.
Survival
things.
Is his most opportunity.
Yeah, survival.
I love unsavory. That is like the best way to describe him. Is just.
And so Matthew paused, and then I abandoned him to fend for himself, which is the biggest mistake you could ever fucking make if you look at the big picture. But Matthew is not about big picture, as we know. He's about the moment. So Mark is still embracing his naivete. Who taught him how to survive?
His voice was hushed, like, oh my God, somebody could live like that? That's so spoiled, Marcus. Anyway,
Benjamin taught himself. It was part of his punishment. It became a part of mine too. God's way of making me atone for my sin. Because I abandoned Benjamin, I didn't know that I had given him the same blood rage that was in my own veins. It was years before that I found out what a monster Benjamin had become. And then Marcus is like, wait,
what? Also, another what? This is right. I think we've got a big change in here. What we can talk about at the end.
Oh, the arc change?
Between the arc, from the arc to the final version.
I'll put it down as a reminder here. So Marcus is like, wait, what? Blood rage? That's impossible. It turns you into a cold-blooded killer without reason or compassion. There hasn't been a case of it for nearly two millennia. You told me so yourself. And then Matthew's like, I lied.
I can't wait for this scene, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I could just see Matthew get
about
lied.
That. There is no Santa Claus. Thanks, kid. All right.
Man.
I mean, this is the second time he's had a big admission of I lied when he told Diana. Was it in the church when she said, you told me you could crave your could curb your cravings.
I lied.
He's like, I lied to you and to myself.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I lied.
At least they're big lies. They're not like tons of little lies, though.
Instead of death by a thousand
cuts.
It's
not the death of a thousand.
You're right.
Right. Yes.
So Hamish is arguing, you can't have blood rage, Matt. There's a mention of it in the family papers. Its symptoms include blind fury and the inability to reason and an overwhelming instinct to kill. You've never shown any sign of that disease. Hamish.
Why is this in the family papers?
I don't know.
Especially if Philippe is like worried about them, anybody finding the family secret. Why is it on paper?
They didn't have shredders back then.
And they have that fancy security system in the round tower.
Yeah. Also with Hamish, Matthew just got done telling you a story back in your house in Scotland about how he killed Cecilia and Eleanor and just lost his fucking... Hamish, you're a smart demon. Why aren't you putting two and two together right here? Okay, so Matthew says, I've learned to control it most of the time. Most of the time, guys.
Most of the time.
So...
I won't get pregnant. I don't have sex that often.
Well, no, nothing could happen. It's fine.
Right.
It's the first first time.
Right. If the congregation were to find out, there would be a price on your head, according to what I've read here. Other creatures would have to carte blanche destroy you. And this is Hamish, and he's concerned. Not just me. My children, too. Okay, bye, guys. Like, oh, my God. Marcus is like, oh, what? Sarah, who's joined us again.
Sarah's back. Right.
Her expression was stricken. The babies. You can see where that's where her concern lies, right? And Phoebe's concern is...
Good point. Good point,
Sarah. Marcus! And that's where her concern lies, right? Matthew's just like, oh, yeah, he's only a carrier. It's no big deal. No big deal, guys.
Yeah. The symptoms manifest immediately.
And you're not going to have kids, it's cool. So...
And then Phoebe looked relieved. She's like, oh, so it's not my problem, right? Okay, guys, thanks. So Matthew looked at his son squarely in the eyes. When I made you... I genuinely believe that I was cured. It had almost been a century since I had an episode. It was the age of reason. In our pride, we believe that all sorts of past evils have been eradicated, from smallpox to superstition. Then you went to New Orleans. And then it's dawning on Marcus. It's like, oh, my own children. Oh, my God. You and Juliet Duran came to the city and they started turning up dead. I thought Juliet had killed them. But it was you. You killed them because of their blood rage. Welcome, Marcus. Welcome to the table. And Isabeau said,
ding, ding, ding.
Your father had no choice. The congregation knew that there was trouble in New Orleans. Philippe ordered Matthew to deal with it before the vampires found out the cause. Had Matthew refused, you would have all died. And Matthew's like, and the vampires on the congregation were convinced that the old scourge of blood rage had returned. They wanted to raise the city and burn it out of existence. But I argue that the madness was a result of youth and inexperience. Not blood rage.
I should have just blamed Lestat de Lioncourt myself.
You know, if you're going to place blame right there.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you want to talk about a rabble-rousing troublemaker, people.
I was supposed to kill them all. I was supposed to kill you too, Marcus. Yeah, I mean, by the way. Marcus looks surprised. Hey. Isabeau did not. Philippe was...
I love that line. Marcus looks surprised.
Isabeau
did not.
So Matthew explained, Philippe was furious with me, but I destroyed only those that who were symptomatic. So, you know, only the ones that were symptomatic, Marcus, I left you some. Come on now. I killed them quickly without pain or fear. I explained the way or the rest of my grandchildren's excesses, however, I could. Poverty, inebriation, greed. Then I took on the responsibility for what happened in New Orleans, resigned my seat on the congregation, and swore that you would make no more children until you were older and wiser. And then Marcus is...
Oh my God, did he like just totally throw shade Ransom's way?
I don't know.
Yes, he did. Poverty, inebriation, greed.
They're a mess down there, Philippe.
Wow.
You know how people get.
Wow. Talk about, did he really earn that shade? I don't know.
And then Marcus is like, you told me I was a failure, a disgrace to the family. Oh, God.
Yeah, well.
Oh, boy.
And Matthew's like, I had to make you stop. I didn't know what else to do. And I mean, that's a parent thing. It's like, stop.
Right.
Come on. I need you to stop. I don't know what it's going to take, but I'm going to make you stop. And Sarah wants to know, who else knows your secret, Matthew? And then he makes a list. Varen, Baldwin, Stasia and Freja, Fernando and Galglass, Miriam, Mart, Alon. He extended his fingers one by one as the names tumbled out of his mouth. So did Hugh, Godfrey, Hancock, Louisa, and Luis. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's quite a bit of few people.
Yeah. And there's quite a bit of living and dead in there, too.
And the fact that Marcus didn't know this, it's like, I would be hurt if I were Marcus, too. I would be.
Yeah.
I'd want to know. So Marcus looks at his father bitterly. I want to know everything from the beginning.
Here's an interesting thing, too, as I think about it. All of these people would have actually witnessed Matthew in
a state of rage,
in the throes of blood rage. They would have literally seen him having an episode.
Right.
Maybe that's another reason Marcus was never told, because by that time he had it under control.
And he would disappear for a while.
And he thought he was cured.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's like there was nothing to be explained to Marcus.
Yes, yeah, you're right.
Because if you think about it, a lot of these people came into the family through battle. I mean, Hancock, we know.
Right.
Freya, we know now. I'm betting Varen, because we know she's a Visigoth. Mm-hmm. Baldwin was around before Matthew was even made. Fernando came into the family on the battlefield, and so Minnesota Galaglass.
So they would have seen him in action.
Yeah.
Or heard of it somehow. So Marcus looked at his father bitterly. I want to know everything from the beginning. And Isabeau chimes in, Matthew cannot tell you the beginning of this tale. Only I can. And then Matthew's like, no, Mama. That's not necessary. And we can tell this is heavy stuff coming. Yes, of course it is. Mm-hmm. I brought the disease into the family. I'm a carrier like Marcus. And Sarah's like, whoa, what? You? And then, yeah.
She's not going to need that extra cup of coffee this morning.
She's awake. So Isabel tells the story. She's like, the disease was in my sire. He believed it was a great blessing for lowercase Lamia to carry his blood, for it made you truly terrifying and nearly impossible to kill. There was a constant warfare between vampires then, and any possible advantage was seized. But I was a disappointment. My maker's blood did not work in me as he had hoped, though the blood rage was strong in his other children. So as punishment, and then she stopped with a shaky breath. As punishment, I was locked in a cage to provide my brothers and sisters with a source of entertainment. I mean, that's a euphemism right there. As well as the creature on whom they can practice killing. My sire did not expect me to survive. I lived for a very long time in that tiny barred prison, filthy, starving, wounded inside and out, unable to die, though I longed for it. But the more I fought, the longer I survived, the more interesting I became. My sire, my father, took me against my will, as did my brothers. Everything that was done to me stemmed from a morbid curiosity to see what might finally tame me. But I was fast and smart. My sire began to think I might be useful to him after all. And then Marcus is like, whoa, what? That's not what Philippe told us, okay? Yeah. Grandfather said he rescued you from a fortress, that your maker had kidnapped you and made you a vampire against your will because you were so beautiful and he couldn't bear to let anyone else have you. Philippe said your sire made you to serve him as his wife.
Ding, 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 ding. It's the Trojan War.
Yeah.
Ding, ding, ding.
And it sounds so fairy tale-ish coming from Marcus, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
You prettied up the story a little bit for Marcus.
Yeah, Philippe is the original myth maker.
Yeah, so Isabeau says, all of that was the truth, but just not the whole truth. Philippe did find me in a fortress and rescued me from that terrible place. But I was no beauty then, no matter what romantic stories your grandfather later told. I had shorn my head with a broken shell that a bird had dropped on a window ledge so that they couldn't use my hair to hold me down. I still have the scars, though they are hidden now. One of my legs was broken. An arm too, I think, Isabeau said vaguely. Mart will remember. So Diana's thinking, no wonder Isabeau and Mart had treated me so tenderly after LaPierre. One had been tortured and the other had put her back together again after the ordeal. Good.
Wow. Way to make it all about her. Even in her internal monologue, it's not like, oh my God, that is so horrible and tragic and da-da-da-da-da. It's like, oh, that's why they knew how to give me such good care.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
That's how she relates to the story, though.
Well, yeah, I know, right. But it's still like kind of lacking in empathy.
Oh. Hate reading, people. Hate reading. It's good. It's passionate.
Uh-huh. It's just some of the things that go on inside her head just make me like, why? It makes you, I don't know. I think it's part of the reason that Diana is so hard to relate to for a lot of readers.
Right. Right. But that's how she relates to the tale. You know,
yeah.
It's like, okay, maybe she was thinking about, it's like, why would Isabeau just put me back together? She obviously didn't like me.
Yeah, exactly. Why was she so kind to me and how did they know what to do? And
so it continues and Diana's thinking, but Isabeau's tale was not yet finished. When Philippe and his soldiers came, they were the answer to my prayers. They killed my sire straight away. Philippe's men demanded all my sire's children be put to death so that the evil poison in her blood will not spread. One morning, they came back and took my brothers and sisters away. Philippe kept me behind. He would not let them touch me. Your grandfather lied and said, Philippe, I lied.
Yep.
And said I had not been infected with my maker's disease, that someone else had made me, and I had killed only to survive. There was no one left to dispute it. So, and then she looked at Marcus. It is why Philippe forgave Matthew for not killing you, Marcus, though he had ordered him to do so. Philippe knew what it was to love someone too much to see him perish unjustly. So this didn't make Marcus feel better. Anyway, Isabel goes on. We kept my secret, Philippe, Mart, and I, for centuries. I made many children before we came to France, and I thought that the blood rage was a horror that we had all left behind. My children all lived long lives and never showed a trace of the illness. Then came Matthew. So Matthew was the first to display this shit.
Fuck.
Well, the other thing is, too, is like Philippe knew what it was to love someone too much to let it, to see him perish unjustly. It's like kind of where does that put Matthew in this whole equation?
I mean, didn't I would imagine Philippe would have been like
whatever.
Yeah, I think he gave a lot of latitude to Isabel. It's like,
yeah, but what I'm saying is Isabel loved Matthew too much to let him perish.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
Philippe, not so much.
Yeah, get rid of him.
Whatever. Whatever you decide is fine by me.
Yeah.
He was more humane about it. He's like, let's put him on a boat. Like you said, whatever happens, happens.
Bygones.
Okay. So Isabel continues, by the time I had made Matthew, my sire was nothing more than a dark legend among vampires. He was held up as an example of what would happen if we gave in to our desires for blood and power. Any vampire even suspected of having blood rage was immediately put down, as his sire was and any offspring.
So I'm still thinking Agamemnon. As far as who the sire might, the legends that might correlate to Isabeau's sire, the comment about desire for blood and power makes me think of Agamemnon more so than Achilles or Paris. Paris just wanted to have a good time. The Achilles wasn't about power. He was just about fighting. And Patroclus, so there's that.
Yeah.
And nobody liked Agamemnon. They hacked him apart.
So you think that was him, though?
Well, yeah. Well, I kind of think that might be him, but we'll find out someday, I guess. I'm sorry.
Maybe eventually.
I digress, as I want to do.
All right. So Isabel continues, but I cannot kill my child, and I would not let anyone else do so either. It was not Matthew's fault that he was sick. It's not his fault he's sick. I'll take care of him. Mm-hmm. Like a stray puppy. Like, yeah. Can I keep him fully?
Please.
Man. And then Matthew says, it was no one's fault, Maman. It was a genetic disease, one that we still don't understand because of Philippe's initial ruthlessness and all the family had done to hide the truth. The congregation doesn't know that the sickness is in my veins. They may not know for sure, Isabel warned, but some in the congregation suspect it. There were vampires who believed that your sister's illness was not madness, as we claim, but blood rage. I mean, we all witness Louisa.
Yeah.
Right.
In the throes, and I could understand why some of the older vampires are like, is that shit back? What's going on here?
What the fuck's going on there?
And then Diana's like, Gerber, I whispered. And Isabel's nodded. She's like, yeah, Domenico too, because, you know, they talk, whatever.
Domenico used to hang out with Louisa back in the day a lot.
It's like, oh yeah, that bitch was crazy.
Yeah, she was more than crazy.
Okay, so Matthew says, don't borrow trouble. I sat at the council table while the disease was being discussed, and no one had the slightest inkling that I was afflicted with it.
So, sure, Matthew.
Yeah, I know. So as long as they believe blood rage is extinct, our secret is safe. Marcus is like, okay, well, I have bad news then. The congregation feels that blood rage is back. It's Matthew's turn. What do you mean?
See how effective? Then you get the answer. Yeah.
And Marcus explains the vampire murders. The killing seemed to stop this winter, but the congregation is still dealing with the sensational headlines, Marcus continued. The perpetrator that was never caught, so the congregation is braced for the killings to resume any moment. Gerber told me so in April when I made my initial request that the covenant be repealed. And then Diana chimes in. No wonder Baldwin is reluctant to acknowledge me as his sister. Yeah, Jane, you have a point.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, I do agree. But it is in her head that, and we're all kind of self-centered in her head.
At least she's not blurting it out.
Yeah, I would say, she's got a filter.
Yeah.
But wait, now, unrelated, what did you guys think about the vampire murders? You were like, oh, wow, they're back. I forgot about those.
I did. Yeah. Initially, I was like, oh, right, they would have discussed this. Okay, right.
Yeah.
With all that trouncing around we did in Prague, I mean,
right.
Yeah, I kind of forgot about that. Okay, so with all the attention Philippe's blood vow would bring to the de Clermont family, someone might start asking questions. You might all become murder suspects. The congregation's official pedigree contains no mention of Benjamin. What Phoebe and Marcus have discovered are only family copies, and this is Isabel. Philippe said there was no need to share Matthew's indiscretion. When Benjamin was made, the congregation's pedigrees were in Constantinople. Mm-hmm. We were in far away outremers struggling to hold our territory in the Holy Land. Who would know if we left him out? I mean, what if we just dropped him off our family tree? Who knows, right?
Yeah.
But Hamish is like, but surely other vampires in the Crusade colonies knew about Benjamin. Matthew said very few of those vampires survive. Even fewer would dare to question Philippe's official story. I mean, as a sycophancy to Philippe, where it's like, oh, no, sir, we won't question anything, even though it's kind of suspect. I'm trying to think about how other vampires regarded Philippe, where even if Philippe told kind of a hokey story, they would just nod and look away.
Yeah.
I had a thought, what if this would have solved too many things and we went to have the story we had, but what if in 1590 they included Diana as the blood sworn daughter in their genealogy? And it was an anomaly, and they're looking at it right now, but they're not. So
right. Would they have found it, though? Maybe with Emily up there.
Is it?
Yeah.
I don't know. Because it was said that Emily liked to look at these papers, right?
Right.
I don't know. Was she a flyer? She was a flyer. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. I was thinking about the security, right?
The fancy security system, yes.
So Hamish looks skeptical, and most people would look skeptical at the story. Hamish is right to worry when Matthew's marriage to Diana becomes common knowledge, not to mention Philippe's blood vow and the existence of the twins. Some who have remained silent about my past might not be willing to do so any longer. And that was Isabel. This time it was Sarah who repeated the name. We were all thinking, Gerbert. Uh-huh. Yeah, you guys are getting it. All right. So Isabel nodded. Someone will remember Louise's escapades. And then another vampire may recall what happened among Marcus's children in New Orleans. Gerbert might remind the congregation that once long ago, Matthew showed signs of madness, though he seemed to grow out of them.
Especially since Isabel is a widow and hasn't decided to shack up with him.
Right.
It's like, wait, she's on the market and she's not dating me.
Right. I'm a catch. Don't you guys know?
Yeah. What?
Bad daddy.
And like I was saying with the puzzle pieces, these are just little puzzle pieces that can easily be put together. And Isabel's pointing that out. So Hamish says, and one or both of the twins might have the disease. A 6-month-old killer is a terrifying prospect. No creature would blame the congregation for taking action.
Gee, that's words of comfort, Hamish.
Thanks for calming this situation. Yep. Isabel sounds hopeful here. She says, perhaps a witch's blood will somehow prevent the disease from taking root.
I mean, now we're all coronavirus guys.
Exactly.
It's fine. I'll drink and the alcohol will kill it. Right?
Yeah.
That was an early rumor passing around.
Yeah.
Back in March.
Gin is a cure. You're
right. Oh, God. Anyway. Wait. Marcus's face was still as he concentrated. When exactly was Benjamin made? And Matthew says, in the early 12th century after the First Crusade. When did the witch in Jerusalem give birth to a vampire baby? And then Matthew's like, wait, what? Vampire baby? Right. Oh, my God. All kinds of secrets are being revealed in this convo.
I do like from the reader perspective.
There's another secret baby.
Yeah, right. It's all coming together.
Yeah. So many secret babies.
Isabel told the story to them, and so I guess Sarah's going to tell the story to Marcus. Yeah. The one that Isabel told us about in January, Sarah says. It turns out this is to Matthew. Matthew's finding this out for the first time.
Yeah.
It turns out that you and Diana aren't the only special creatures in the world. This has happened before. It's like, oh, man, and they were thinking they were special. It's like you and me against the world.
That's pretty delicate the way she said it, though. Yeah. She's more blunt. Like, you ain't special. Yeah.
And they were thinking, oh, we were meant to be. We created these babies. You're not the only ones.
I thought they were special. I wanted Jean's theory to be true.
Same here. I love my theory.
Oh, God. So Isabeau says, I've always thought it was nothing more than a rumor spread around to turn creatures against one another. But Philippe believed the tale. And now Diana has come home pregnant.
She's selling this here.
I know. I believe it, too. But she was more definitive in the conversation in Septor.
Yeah, in January, she was like, yeah, Philippe held the baby. It really existed. Da 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 da.
Yes.
And now it's just like, well, Philippe believed it. I just thought it was some crazy rumor. Like, what are you doing, Isabeau?
You know how those stories get around.
No wonder Matthew's acquaintanceship with the truth is sometimes suspect.
Well, look how he was raised. I'm telling you.
How he was raised.
Well, and that just brings up a whole other set of questions. Philippe held the baby?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So Matthew's like, tell me, Mama, everything. Here's her gently going into it.
Yeah.
A vampire raped a witch in Jerusalem. she conceived his child. I mean, very blunt, very matter of fact, no sugaring up this story. We never knew who the vampire was. The witch refused to identify him. Diana's thinking to herself, only weavers can carry a vampire child, not ordinary witches. Goody Alsop had told me as much in London. And Matthew's like, when? And Isabeau looked thoughtful, just before the congregation was formed and the covenant was signed, you know. And that just made me think on first read, on this read, on every read, why do you think the covenant was signed? You know,
right.
Because this baby, it's like, oh shit, we need to do this, right? And then more pieces get put together. Matthew's like, just after I made Benjamin. And then Hamish is like, perhaps Benjamin inherited more than blood rage from you. And then Matthew wants to know, and the child? And Isabeau whispered, died of starvation. The babe refused to take her mother's breasts. So Matthew shot to his feet. Many newborns will not take their mother's milk. And this is Isabeau, like, calm down, Matthew. And then Matthew demanded, did the baby drink blood? And Isabeau winced. The mother claimed she did, but Philippe was not so sure. By the time he held the child, she was on the brink of death and would not take any nourishment at all. Matthew's like, Philippe should have told me this when they met Diana. But I'm thinking, would that have changed your mind, Matthew?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
No, I don't think it would change. And would he believe him?
Yeah.
And he didn't know. He didn't know about weavers and blood rage and the combination of the two.
No. I mean, especially if you tell people who are in love like that and it's like you and me against the world.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure.
Listen to that.
Well, not to mention the fact that he may have already he had a job there, which was to make sure that they got together.
Yeah. That was his mission.
Sharing that with Matthew would make his own job more difficult. Because it would have just made things messier.
That's true.
Philippe is all about convenience.
And Matthew, I mean, in his Matthew self, he's throwing blame everywhere. He's like, feeling that, you should have told me when I first brought her home. And I'm thinking, that wouldn't have changed your mind either. Well, she was trying to stop you.
And I keep coming back to the whole, you don't tell anybody shit, but you're mad at everybody else because they're like editing the transcript. Really?
To your point, Jean, Philippe's job was to get them together, but he's like, you must mate. Yeah. You must do it. He was the opposite of that.
And if we all did what we should, we would wake up to find ourselves in a paradise. And this is Isabeau, her temper rising.
Yeah.
Like, you shut the fuck up, kid.
Yeah.
Watch
your mouth, Karen. If wishes were fishes.
Okay, so Sarah comes in and is our reasonable Sarah. She's like, stop it, both of you. You can't hate your father or Isabeau for something you've done yourself, Matthew.
It's the equivalent of waving her phone in the air.
Like, hello? Besides, we have enough problems in the present without worrying about what happened in the past. So thank you, Sarah. Okay.
Yes. Sarah is the voice of reason now.
What's done is done.
Yep. So Marcus wants to know, what are we going to do? And Matthew seems surprised by the question, like, we're going to just keep going like we're going. Why? What's the problem? And Marcus says, we are a family, whether the congregation recognizes us or not. Just as you and Diana are a husband and wife, no matter what those idiots in Venice believe. And Matthew's like, we'll let Baldwin have his way for now. I'll take Sarah and Diana to Oxford. And if what you say is true, another vampire, possibly Benjamin, fathered a child on a witch. We need to know how and why some witches and vampires can reproduce. And Marcus is like, I'll let Miriam know. She'll be glad to have you back in the lab again. While you're there, you can try to figure out how blood rage works. I mean, come on. And then Matthew's like, what do you think I've been doing this whole time? Oh, Diana's like, it didn't occur to her. She's like, your research. You haven't been looking solely for creature origins. You've been trying to figure out how blood rage is contracted and how to cure it. Matthew admitted, no matter what else Miriam and I are doing in the lab, we're always hoping to make some discovery that will lead to a cure. And then Hamish asks, what can I do? And Matthew says, you'll have to leave Septuor too. I need you to study the Covenant, whatever you can find out about early congregation debates, anything that might shed light on what happened in Jerusalem between the end of the First Crusade and the date of the Covenant became law. Matthew looked about the Round Tower. It's too bad you can't work from here. And Phoebe offers help. I'll help with the research if you like. And then Hamish is like, surely you'll go back to London. She's like, no, I'm going to stay here with Marcus. There's no congregation rule that bars me from remaining at Septuor. And Matthew says, these restrictions are only temporary once the members of the congregation satisfy themselves that everything is as it should be at Septuor. Gerber will take Isabeau to his house at the Cantal. After the drama, Baldwin will soon grow bored, okay, and return to New York. I got it all figured out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Boom, yep. Boom, boom, boom. Yep.
And then we can all meet back here, and hopefully by then, we'll know more, and we can make a better plan. We'll see how we feel. Marcus is like, of course, if you formed a scion, and Matthew's like, impossible. Oh, here we go in French, okay. Impossible n'est pas français. Did I do that right? That's good.
That's
okay.
Good.
Sorry, guys. Excuse my French. I'll do the Canadian sorry. Sorry.
Sorry.
Sorry. My French pronunciation is terrible. Isabeau said, her tone is tart as vinegar, and it certainly was not a word in your father's vocabulary. The only thing that sounds out of the question to me is remaining within Baldwin's clan and under his direct control, and this is Marcus. After all of the secrets that have been exposed today, you think my name and blood are something you should be proud to possess, and this is Matthew. Like, you're surprised? Really, Matthew? Come on. Think better of yourself. Anyway.
Right.
And Marcus is like, rather you than Baldwin, all right, dude? Matthew's like, I don't know how you can bear to have me in your presence. Huh.
You know, yeah. I don't like this.
Oh, God. Stop it, Matthew. Stop it. Never mind. Forgive me. Oh, God.
He's like going full on Scorpio right now. Like,
yeah, oh. Yeah.
He's in a spiral. Just let him work his way out of it. It'll be okay.
He'll get there. He'll get there. So Marcus says, I haven't forgiven you. Find the cure for blood rage. Fight to have the covenant repealed and refuse to support a congregation that upholds such unjust laws. Form a scion so that we can live without Baldwin breathing down our necks. I mean, he's got a list there. It's
yeah,
not a small
it's
ask.
Yeah, it's not a small ask.
Okay. And then Matthew's like, and then? Marcus is like, then not only will I forgive you, but I will be the first to offer you my allegiance, Marcus said, not only as my father, but as my sire. And that is the end, guys. Anything to add? Oh, I'm going to bring up the Ark, Jean.
Yes, we need to bring up the Ark.
Okay.
Bring up the Ark.
Where are we talking?
When he tells the story about why he made Benjamin.
Give me a couple words just so I can search it.
It's just after Count of Mikio.
How do you want to do it? Do you want to read the regular passage and I'll tell you what's different?
Okay, or I think it came...
A different approach.
Came after where it started. Death was too quick.
So the original passage. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm at the original passage. The original passage was death was too quick. I wanted to punish Benjamin for being a false friend. I wanted him to suffer as we creatures suffered. I made him a vampire so that if he exposed the declarements, he would have to expose himself. Then I abandoned him to fend for himself. And then who taught him how to survive? Benjamin taught himself. That was part of his punishment. It became part of mine. God wanted, you know, then God wanted me to make atones. Da 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 da. Wah wah wah.
So, what does the Ark say?
That's not even in there.
No.
Nope.
Death was too quick isn't in the Ark, and neither is who taught him to survive.
So it was right after. Why didn't you kill him? And this is Marcus.
Yeah.
Okay. There is
wow.
No why didn't you
kill him? Wow. Okay. So Benjamin was Godfrey's son from Sarah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. That's where that was between Benjamin was one of the German crusaders.
Yeah.
And then, okay, so this is in the Ark. Benjamin was one of the German crusaders who marched with Count Amico. Amico's army toward mm-hmm. the Holy Land. When they were beaten and hungry, he joined up with my brother Godfrey's mm-hmm. forces. Matthew began. Benjamin's mother was a daughter of a prominent merchant in the Levant, and he learned some Hebrew and even some Arabic because of the family's business operation. He was a valuable ally okay. at first. So Benjamin was Godfrey's son, Sarah mm-hmm. asked.
Yep.
Go on.
Yes.
Okay. No, Matthew, he was mine. Benjamin began to trade into Claremont family secrets. He swore he would expose the existence of creatures, not just vampires, but witches and demons, to the humans in Jerusalem, along with information that I was afflicted with blood rage. Making him a vampire was the only way I could ensure his silence. Blood rage? Marcus looked at his father incredulously. That's impossible. It turns you into a cold-blooded killer without reason or compassion. Oh. There hasn't been a case of it for nearly two millennia. You told me so yourself. I lied. Matthew's voice cracked at the admission.
Wow. So they skipped that whole part of, yeah. of Matthew's explanation there.
Yep. Well, they okay. they skipped Matthew's explanation.
Yeah. No need to explain that. It's fine.
Which would explain why I got into a big bunch of trouble when I was discussing what was going on with Matthew at the time. And I was arguing right. off the ark.
And this is before, was this right after the book, the actual book came out,
yes.
right? And you were still basing it off the ark.
I was just working off the ark because that's what was handy.
Shit.
Whoops. I didn't figure there would be something that glaring a change from an, I mean, usually from an ark, it's like mostly typos. It's, I mean, it wasn't an uncorrected I didn't think it was an uncorrected manuscript where it was like first edit and they actually distributed that for review.
Right.
Which
it was though, I think. Yeah. I think it does say uncorrected manuscript on there. So on the ark. Oh, wow. That's kind of a big chunk left out there. Wow.
It is.
And so they put it in the final
they put it
then.
In the final where he explained why he did it. But he wasn't very explicit to say, I didn't want him to give away my blood rage secrets, which he did in the arc where he was like, oh, he's going to spill the beans about my blood rage. And
right.
nothing about Philippe wanting to make kind of a utopia over there, right?
No.
For creatures. Yeah. So they left that out too. That's interesting. Huh. Anything else to add on this chapter?
Not on this chapter, no.
No, mm-mm, I think we're good. So. Okay. Going once, going twice, guys. Sold. All right, let's go on to housekeeping. And housekeeping this time is brought to us by Suzanne Stevenson. Thank you, Suzanne.
Thank you, Suzanne.
Thank you.
Housekeeping.
Who wants to start?
I have a first-time writer in her.
Oh, wow.
She's been listening for a while. She's been a discusser for a while, but she hasn't written in before. So okay. Welcome, Nadia.
Hey, Nadia. Thank you.
Hello, Angela, Jean, and Valerie. I've been listening to this podcast since last year when I went looking for discussions for the TV show episodes. I was so glad to hear you guys discussing the books as well because I love them so much and have been a huge fan since 2016. I wanted to discuss chapter 4, but I think you guys already finished recording, so I'll try to make this quick. It's been a while since I reread the books, but my memory is pretty great when it comes to fictional books, so I just read this chapter. First things first, Philippe's vampire daughters and I will get along greatly. There is nothing in this universe that I admire more than the de Clermont vampire daughters, even though we don't know them that well enough. Varin right. leading Diana into the fox's den just so she can watch the drama unfold is definitely something I would do. You're my kind of gal, Nadia. Poor Baldwin. Humans have to mature a lot faster than vampires, that's for sure. But why do vampires take centuries before maturing? I mean this not in a nasty way. Marcus acting irrationally towards Baldwin irritated me. Why was he expecting Baldwin to be on his side? Diana, who's only known Baldwin for like 2 seconds, even said in this chapter that she could have told Marcus that Baldwin wouldn't have voted for him. How come Marcus didn't know this even though he's been in the family for over 3 centuries? Later,
Matthew.
Spoilers, I guess. When Matthew decides to branch out his family and give a little authority to his new family, my heart goes out to Baldwin again. Poor guy just inherited the family seat from his legend of a father and his younger brother is already dividing them up.
That's so true. Holy yeah. shit.
Yep. Let's talk about Phoebe. I always liked her. I'm surprised to hear other people haven't opened up to her yet. I like her quiet, diplomatic self. She reminds me of me. I'm like 1,000 years, perhaps she'll be able to fulfill Isabeau's shoes. One thing about her that struck me vividly was in Time's Convert when she hears Freya say something about Isabeau and she thinks she'll file that away as quiet revenge against Freya because she likes Isabeau. It's been a while, but I think that's the gist of what she thought. Struck me as odd seeing as how Freya literally took her under her wing. Also, Phoebe is marrying into the inferior branch of the De Claremonts, as Baldwin puts it so charmingly. I think she's going to learn that Philippe's daughters are not to be stood against so easily. Again, my bias for Philippe's daughters are maybe clouding my judgment, but hey, what's the point of reading fiction if you can't find characters you can't connect with?
That's true. That's what it's all about.
True.
Yep. Yep.
Diana in this chapter was cool. I always liked how she tried to work him to get her answers. I think this is a chapter where the characters really crack down on the difference between Isabeau de Clermont's line and Philippe's vampire line. I really wonder what hot mess Matthew has done for all of Philippe's children to dislike him so much. Don't we all?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yes.
I realize this email is all over the place, and I hope I don't spoil anyone. I get overboard when I start talking about certain characters. I'll write again in a few chapters when I have more thoughts. I hope I didn't ramble on too much. Let me know if you have any thoughts on this. Nadja. Nadja, come sit on the couch next to me. We can ramble together.
Yeah, it's so true. She brings up some really good points. It's when I think of Diana, it's like, you've been through this ride with Matthew, though, even though it's been a short period of time. What makes you think that you're so special that these rules don't apply to you?
Yeah.
What, you know, it's just little things. It's like where I feel like in the Book of Life, she's realizing this and we're on the journey with her. And half the time I want to throw out the window. It's like, come on, this has been apparent the whole time. Yeah. But you've been ignoring it because you were so in love.
Yeah. Is that right?
Yeah. Right. So, yeah, a lot of good realism for Diana in this book. And that I appreciate this book for that. So yeah,
she gets the metaphorical shake some sense into her.
Yeah, it's like, or like on the airplane movies where they line up and slap the shit out of them.
Yes.
Snap out of it. Anyway, <Yeah. laughs> Angela, what do you have?
I have an email from Sue.
Hi, Sue.
Hi, Sue.
She says, "Dear Demons, I know you get loads of mail thanking you for getting us through hard times, and here's a fresh example. Last night, I woke up at 1:30 after a terrifying dream, one of those where you need to scream, but your voice won't cooperate. I knew that I would need to reprogram my brain to get back to sleep and not re-enter the nightmare. So I grabbed my phone and pulled up the latest episode of The After Show." Oh, geez. We're talking about a fever dream coming.
Oh, my word. Oh, no.
Your familiar voices quietly talking about your lives and the times, happily laughing from time to time, put me in a safe place. 4 hours later, I woke to your voices from a much earlier episode because I had forgotten to set a sleep timer, and I just smiled and said, "Thanks, demons." Aww. It's been 52 years since I lived in a college dorm, but you brought me back to the former comfort I need, and I need to thank you for that. Love and peace, Sue.
Oh,
well,
Sue.
You're welcome.
Yeah, how nice.
Even though I didn't know I was doing that for you, but okay.
Right.
And with our after show of all that.
I know.
See, there's that magic after show again.
Usually a little too boisterous to put lull someone to sleep.
Right.
I know. Ugh. On our after show, let me say this. When we started Patreon, I'm like, what we can offer is an after show. And Gene and Angela like, well, what would that look like? And I'm like, you know how we keep talking after we're done recording? Why don't we just record that for the people? And that's basically what you're getting. I mean, we introduce it and then we just talk about whatever. For people to find that interesting is like, wow, what?
Yeah. It's kind of amazing.
But in the times we're living in right now, I get it. Sometimes you need that normalcy, man. Just people just chatting because we're isolated right now just because people can't get their shit together in this country.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
I editorialized a little. Let me stop.
And what's comforting is sometimes knowing you're not alone, whatever the topic is. And that's the beauty of our after shows. We don't know what the topic is going to be.
Yes.
And so I'm just like, oh, I didn't realize that. Or yes, I agree with that. Or hey, that happened and it's not such a great thing, but I know I'm not alone.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. So thank you, Sue. Hopefully we can help you in the future. Any of you guys, just tune in to our regular shows or after shows. Apparently they're soothing. Okay. All right. Mine is the first part of that email from Crystal that I read in the discussor email. So thank you, Crystal, again for this.
Thank you.
Okay, so she says, okay, first off, I've been with you guys for years. Then I finally became a patron. And then I finally became a discussor. However, I'm a bad discussor because I've never chimed in before. So now I'm finally discussing. Anyway, Second off, shout out to Val. I adore you. Your mouth fits you all the way, baby. Your purses and your complete package of sass and utter realism. Oh, is that what? Okay. I guess.
You're larger than life.
I tell you, if you put me in a Barbie doll package and say, with sass and utter realism, by today.
You, anyway. you need a purse named sass and the other one needs to be utter realism.
Yes. I'm wearing my utter realism today.
You'll have a pull behind suitcase for traveling that says utter realism.
I tell you what, this boon of purses I had with this pandemic, I can't even wear them. What the?
Yeah.
It's terrible.
I know.
Anyway, Angela, it's your turn. Here's the label for your Barbie box. Angela, your levity, at times much needed with the other two. Your perspective, your calmness. Yes, it sounds that way from this side of the speaker. And your ghosts are a fantastically fun part of the triad. So
my Barbie box would come with a magic eight ball, and you could try to wind me up, and it wouldn't work.
And it includes a free Jerry.
Right.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I can definitely see that about Angela. I mean, if Angela didn't have a sense of humor, she would have left us a long time a fucking go.
She would have thrown up her hands.
I mean, half the shit I edit out of this podcast is me and Jean just snorting and laughing about some shit. And Angela just sits there, waits patiently for us to get done.
It's fine, I'll wait.
We need to get her a package of nail files for Christmas.
I love it.
Okay, Jean. Yours is special. Jean, my dear Scorpio sister. And she was born November 13th.
Oh. Okay.
I relate to your passion, intensity, and ridiculously broad range of deep interests, like I was looking in a mirror. So she relates to you the most of all. Yeah, I know.
Oh, no.
On Jean's Barbie box, complete with passion, intensity, and ridiculously broad range of interests. What does that look like? It's a lot of font, that's for sure. You're designing the box.
It's kind of extra.
Well, that's you, my dear.
Oh, God.
It comes with a history book and a beret and glasses. And
I've got one of those little stripy French girl sweaters.
You have the most accessories of them all.
Right.
Too many.
Anyway, Crystal goes on. She says, the combination of the three of you is as magical as the All Souls world itself. I'm so grateful for you all. The allowances you gift us listeners with, allowing us such deep intimacy into your daily lives, your authenticity, and you all just being you, makes us feel like friends, or at the very least, like a part of a very special group of people. Thank you from the bottom of my heart, particularly during these unusual times. I love listening to the regular pods, but I really love the after show. Here we go again.
Yeah.
So, you guys, if you're wondering, I mean, patreon.com, Demons Discuss, $2 a month will get you this after
my
show.
My dick
anyway.
Jokes really aren't that good, though. I have to up my game.
Okay. And then she goes on, the one that you dropped with your heartfelt reactions to George Floyd's murder was amazing, spot on. And again, your authenticity is so appreciated. Please continue being you always. And then she goes on, third off, I live in Philadelphia and know that your experience the last time you were here was not that stellar. That's so ironic. I'm not from here, but I have been here since 1989. I used to travel for work throughout North America as much as Angela or Jean combined.
Wow.
And slowly came to the realization that I compared every place that I went to Philadelphia, and they all came up short. Give us another chance, whether it's pizza, cheesesteaks, butter cake. Look it up if you don't know. Pork sandwiches, falafel, a perfectly poured Guinness, or any other cocktail. Philly rocks it. My heart broke with the COVID-19 pandemic and for the global impact. Also for my personal impact, which meant no demons in Philly.
Yeah. Aww.
I really hope I get the opportunity to change your minds with my amazing adopted city. We'll see you in 2021.
Hey, see you there.
Yeah.
See you there.
Fingers crossed. Fingers crossed.
Yeah. We managed to find a liquor store on Society Hill, so it wasn't all bad.
It wasn't that bad. We drank our way through it. It's cool. that, she says, now I'm done gushing. And thank you so much, Crystal.
Thank you, Crystal.
And yours was one of the emails. Like, every once in a while, I'll open up an email and I'll look and I'll say, oh, and then I'll screenshot it. This is why my phone has so many screenshots. And I'll put it in the message box so the other two can look. And it's like, wow.
It's usually when it's in the middle of a really bad day.
Yeah.
So you guys really boost us.
Yeah.
Likewise, so, you guys are therapy.
Absolutely. I mean, the fact that we are able to do this and talk to each other and talk to you all, it's good for us.
Yes. So,
I guess it's time for Save for the Show, guys.
Yep. Here we go.
Here we go. This episode of Save for the Show is brought to us by Shannon Millman Rodriguez. Thank you, Shannon.
Thank you,
Shannon.
Save it for the show.
Save it for the show.
Guys, save it for the show. This episode, Save It for the Show, the topic is TV news.
Yay!
Finally.
Yay! Yeah. Give us a little synopsis.
It's not a ton of news, but it's very, very important news. Yesterday on Deadline, spokespeople from Sky have indicated that they believe shooting will be starting in September for season 3, and that the cancellation insurance, I think it's called, or interruption insurance issue has been pretty much resolved, because they're worried about starting filming and then having to shut down again with a spike in COVID.
Right.
Because basically what happens with that is then they're furloughing people. The business could go under. Right. Also, they've resolved how they're going to handle making sure everybody stays healthy and safe as far as lockdown sets and weekly testing and
temperature taking.
And all of that. So they're not only looking out for everybody's health and welfare, they're also making sure that if something does come up, that they will be in a financial position to rally the gang back around and finish things up if they have to.
Yep. Finish it properly.
And that came from Sky. That's important. It came from Sky. It's not Teresa chit-chatting on her Instagram account, or Deb saying, well, I hope I'm going to be going here on this day, or I think I might be doing that. This is Sky saying, yes, we have all the adulting has been done and we've got our paperwork in order.
And this is the official, like we were talking about the scroll and Benjamin being there. And then this is the official, all other drafts have been shredded.
Yes. So, I mean, when it starts coming from Sky, who are the people who write the checks, this is important. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of happy. At least we've got something definitive.
Well, that's good.
Well, because being the lawyer, too, is like, shit, if they don't get that insurance thing resolved, that's just going to keep everything dead in its tracks.
Right.
Period. Yeah. Dot. End of story.
And I'm also looking at it from a U.S. lens, in that even though our passports are useless and we can't get our shit together here.
Yeah.
Let me time date us. It is July 18th at this point in time.
Yes.
And we are more ravaged with COVID than ever.
I think parts of Texas are in the red zone now, which is bad. I'm waiting for another shutdown order to come. Frankly, yesterday I was on Zoom on a court hearing with an idiot attorney who was insisting that the judge give him a jury trial date in September, this September. Even the judge laughed at him.
Yeah.
He's like, even if everybody gave us the all clear, by the beginning of August, I don't think we won't be in a position to start notifying people for jury service for the date you want. So, yeah, no.
I'm thinking about my version of that at my work.
Yeah.
We have birds on the airfield, right? And the pilots will call us and say, hey, are we bird condition moderate? And then I'm like, yeah, we are. Well, when do you expect that to go down? Oh, well, let me talk to the chief bird. I don't know. It's not up to me.
I'm not in charge of the damn flock.
It's not up to me. When do I expect it to go down? When the birds go away. I don't know. You know,
take all those hawks a while to take care of this shit.
I guess my larger point was, it's like when I'm looking at it from a U.S. point of view, it's like, and we are here in this moment, us in the U.S., we're like, we're never getting out of this.
No.
But, you know, I have to think this is filmed in Wales.
Right. Yeah.
And other countries that have managed to pull themselves out, right? So by doing what's proper and right. And I don't know. I'm so pissed.
It's, can we? Just, like, I thought we could still fly to the UK because they're not EU. Or are we banned from the UK too?
I think under certain provisions we can fly there.
Because I mean, Deb would need to be able to get over there too.
It's just, oh God, it's just.
And Valerie, if they have ghosts.
Yeah.
and Daniel, if Daniel's over here, who knows? I mean, because they were, I think they were filming a new season of All American when all this happened.
Yeah. It's the whole reason why I didn't like group projects in school, right? Because you wind up doing all the work and everybody else takes the credit. It's like we did 3 months of this lockdown shit.
Yeah.
And not everybody did the work. And
we're back at square one. Well, we're worse than square one. We're square zero here in Texas.
Oh, God. You know, I don't know. Okay, I'm just bitching. I'm off subject.
But even now that interruption insurance has been cleared, I mean, we have to assume that everyone's schedules are clear because what, like you just mentioned, Daniel, what if he started filming The American again and then he's not available for that?
I'm just thinking he might be stuck over here.
No, I know, but I'm just saying in general, the cast has to, all the stars have to align with their schedules as well.
Yeah.
I mean, even if September, I'm just saying a date, arbitrary date. Even if that was the original start filming date, what if everyone has a backlog because now they're filming from prior projects can resume?
Yeah. It's just like my trial calendar. This is going to be screwed up for the next 2 years. So,
yeah, I'd imagine Dale too with his surgeries.
Well, yeah, actually it hasn't been too horrible because since he's in a surgical center, they haven't, since it's not a lockdown, they can still do those cases because they're not pulling away from hospital resources yet. But if things start getting sticky again with PPE, that's a whole different ball game. I think they're talking, we might be looking at mask shortages again, which is not good. But I digress from our save it for the show.
Yeah, we can save that for the after show.
Yeah. I'll definitely remember that. Jesus. Yeah. I've got a lot to say on that, but I'll leave it alone. So that's good news for now.
Yes. It's news moving in the right direction.
Yes, correct.
Reliable news moving in the right direction. Thank you to Rosalyn for finding that spotting that article. I mean, everything I've been picking up on Google Alerts has been like rehashes of two-year-old crap.
Mm-hmm. She's been kind of a little demon on the spot right there.
She has.
Oh, yeah. Man on the street right there. So she lets us know and we retweet it and we spread the word. And
That's how teamwork works.
It is. It is.
Thank you, Rosalind51.
You guys should follow her on Twitter. I'll put a Twitter link in the show notes.
I think she's Rosalind51 tweet on Twitter and Rosalind51 on Instagram.
And Instagram. Yeah. I think she has a Tumblr as well, but I don't know. I haven't been on Tumblr forever.
No.
Okay. So anything else to add to that bit of news?
Nope.
Or can we move on?
We can move on.
We can move on. All right, guys. Stick with us after this break. We'll do last thoughts and things we cannot let go of. This podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you like to listen to your podcasts. You can contact us, send us your thoughts, email us at demonsdiscuss@gmail.com, leave us a voicemail at 360-519-7836. By the way, your carrier rates apply here. Or leave one for free on SpeakPipe, speakpipe.com/demonsdiscuss. Now, if you can't remember any of that, go to go.demonsdiscuss.com/contact, and all that information will be there. You can also become a discusser there, fill out the form, and bam, you're a discusser. And the link to join our Facebook group is there too. Visit our main site, demonsdomain.com. And if you really feel like deep diving, go to visit.demonsdomain.com/masterpost. And you can read interviews, geek out with weekly geeks about All Souls Universe, read about the characters. Keep that geek flag flying, guys. Do you like what we do? Help us fund what we do. Go to patreon.com/demonsdiscuss. Make sure you follow us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, all at Demons Discuss. If you're liking what you're hearing and you want to tell the world about it, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. We love them. We read them. It's wonderful. Also, it keeps Angela alive, and we need her around, okay? Keep Angela alive!
I've got an interesting last thought from finishing up that last chapter for the Shadow Overnight read-along.
Go.
So Maud Renee and I did the last chapter of Shadow of Night for the real-time discussion that was being held in the discussion group, and came up with kind of a fun theory. What if Shakespeare was the first anomaly?
I always thought he was the first anomaly.
His success.
Wait, what do you mean?
What do I mean? Okay.
Yeah.
Instead of it being a traditional epilogue, we jump ahead 3 years, mm-hmm. right before Annie's death. And Kit has died that day. Passes on the chess piece with the poem
paper.
The paper in it.
Yep.
Because of Kit's death, Annie is put in Shakespeare's path. It changed Annie. And Annie, that because of her time spent with Matthew and Diana, she's now educated. She is primed to be a woman of means who can support mm-hmm. herself. She's not a foundling anymore, but she is put in Shakespeare's path. The Kit that has been impacted by Matthew and Diana remains and impacts on Shakespeare's life. And as far as a professional rival, as far as his impact on their shared audience by creating the love for the supernatural.
Oh, yeah.
Which impacts what Shakespeare has to do to be successful. Because Matthew and Diana were there, he ends up having gallows glass in his life, in and out of his life, with not only with the forgeries he keeps bringing to him, but the stories of the fairies and spirits, which end up infiltrating his writing in the future, like A Midsummer Night's Dream and The Tempest. Because of Matthew and Diana's time walk, Stephen gets dropped in his lap with his
Hamlet
and his sayings.
Yeah.
And here's the most interesting thing I found out. There is a dead zone in Shakespeare's life from 1585 to 1593 or 94, where nobody knows what he was doing. There's no real written record of of what he's doing or where he is. So he's presumably in London, but he doesn't really show up in the record at all.
Yeah.
So, wow. I mean, my theory is that he's actually the first him and his success is the first anomaly. That anomaly obliterates Kit Marlowe, which also makes me sad, but that's a whole nother story.
Yeah. Yeah. So his body of work is the anomaly.
Yes. His success is the anomaly.
Who did Deb say Hancock and Gallowglass were inspired by?
Rosencrantz and
Guildenstern. Guildenstern, yeah. So there's that, too. They wouldn't have been Shakespeare's path either.
Interesting.
Yeah, very interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it's, like I said, it's probably another one of those series that's utterly wrong. But, I mean, and it also...
It fits, though.
It could, also makes sense with the way the story was structured, too.
Yeah.
Because it was like one final time flip. Because we're back in the present, and that would have been the perfect way to close the book. But then we've got another time jump again. And it's like, okay, is this really the first anomaly?
Yeah. It was a blip when they weren't paying attention.
I kind of like to think that it was like Deb's really... witty way of Kit getting a little bit of recognition that is like,
And she's always said Shakespeare is one of the biggest magpies.
Yeah,
it's true.
Yeah.
That's a good one. It made me.
Yeah. I mean, because I think we've pointed out those dots, and now that's a nice way to just connect them.
When I started looking at how the chapters broke up and the anomaly chapters broke up, and then I started thinking about the structure, and I'm like, and then you start looking at it, it's like, it's no different than when you start talking about the time walk aspect, because it's like, Shakespeare was always famous. You know, if you look at it, it's the same.
He was always famous to us.
To us, because we're on a certain timeline. But he is no different than the commonplace book, which once she wrote in it, it always existed, because either Gallowglass had it or handed it off to Fernando, and when Fernando kept it, because it wasn't like these things just like popped up out of nowhere.
Yeah.
There's somebody on that timeline who had, it's just like that whole chest of stuff that, more importantly, is that whole chest of stuff that Alain had.
Yes.
Yeah.
It always existed. It's just Matthew didn't see it.
It's just an example of all the little ripples we live in our world.
Yeah. Because the arguments that I'd get against it is like, but that stuff didn't exist yet. It's like, but yes, it did. Think about it. Mm-hmm. You've got Alain brings this chest saying, here's all your stuff. I've kept it all this time.
Now, I like that it's always been, we were in the past and the anomalies were always shooting to the present. And now we were in the present and now the final or the first anomaly is actually in the past.
Yeah, which was still in the future of our time walk. I mean, it's still three years after our time walk. But I think that's why it took like 15 reads for me to go, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Right. It's like when Diana's supposed to go comfort Philippe and Philippe sends everybody away so he can take Diana's comfort. And it's like, wait, she hasn't done that yet. So sometime in the future,
she's going to do that.
She's going to do that and she's going to give him comfort and hold his hand and do all that. So she doesn't remember it because
it hasn't happened
yet. Hasn't done it yet. Right.
Why can't it work the other way?
Oh, God.
Yeah.
But anyway,
let's stop. We got it under control right
let's
here.
Let's stop when it's where it's nice and pretty and all wrapped up in a bow and not think about it too much anymore.
Yeah. Right.
But anyways, that was my last thought because I was like,
I like it. Thank you, Jean.
It was good. It was good. Angela, what are you bringing to the table?
I'm not bringing anything to the table.
I just eclipsed everybody else's last thought. I feel so
good. Oh, God.
Yeah. No, I just was thinking, I'm reflecting on the Book of Life. And I really thought I was going to love it this time around. Not love it. I really thought I was going to enjoy it this time around. And I vacillate between the old feelings that of not liking it as much as I should and acquiescing, I guess, and going, yeah, it's good. I see what it is. I don't know.
I'm still
in the middle of the road.
I'm enjoying it, but it's kind of like there's things about it I'm noticing. It's like, wow, like that whole Fernando, like, we were so happy to meet someone new. We weren't really looking too closely at the package we were buying.
Yeah.
Like with my feelings with the Book of Life, it's like when I initially read it, it just felt so... boom, boom, boom. Let's solve all her problems and wrap it up in a neat bowl. And that's
here's our big bad. Boom, boom, boom.
And that's what it felt like. Maybe because I didn't have the promise of another book in the future at the time when I ended. I'm like, wait, that's it? There's no more? What?
Yeah. Yeah,
so it was like very much the end of Ferris Bueller. Yeah. The movie's over. Go home.
The bright glaring lights go on. Go home.
Yeah. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. And it's So there was me mourning the loss of that. But now that we're getting the new books, it's like, okay. And then I think about when we're reading through these chapters. You guys, these episodes are long.
Yeah, they are long.
The chapters are long. The chapters are super dense.
Yeah, and there's a lot in here that I don't necessarily think I pay that close attention to in the first time.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
So there's richness of that, getting that back. But how I feel about it, I'm sorry. Shadow of Night will always be my favorite book. It's where I live in my head as far as this world goes. And that's it. I mean,
even this chapter we just did, it was rough in the beginning. I mean, and I'm talking about today, like a couple hours ago, it was rough. I'm like, this is hard for me to get into. And then by maybe the 1/3 went by, I'm like, okay, here, I'm getting into my zone now.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But I find that more often than any other book.
And the interesting thing about it is for as jam packed with information and boom, 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 go, 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 here, there, boom, 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 there's still a lot of richness of character and subtlety as far as the subtext.
Yes.
Even for what's basically what I term the fantasy YA volume of this trilogy, because this is very like plot driven Harry Potter type. All these things are going on. We need to get everybody where they need to be to do this and do that and blah,
go,
blah,
go,
blah.
Go, yeah, and go. And the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. We didn't linger like we did in Shadow of Night. We went to Prague. We lingered.
More so even in Discovery of Witches, but we still have the richness of character because it's like, okay, we've got Fernando, this new guy. We first met him. It's like, I think we were being pushed along so quickly that we didn't have, or I should say we, I didn't appreciate the subtlety in the character. And while I say, he's needling people, he's bitter, he's this and that, I think that's wonderful because it makes him more than the nice guy.
Always
the
perfect nice guy
warrior doing for everybody else all the time. It's like, oh, he's kind of wrapped up in his own shit too. And he should be.
Yeah. I think that's what's an adjustment in the Book of Life, is that you're finding out everyone is, for lack of a better word, human, with their vices, with their shortcomings, with their foibles, and with the good stuff too. But it's not just all good, and it's adjustment to see the whole picture.
With the exception of Benjamin, I would say the same.
Correct.
Benjamin's just the big bad.
We don't have a richness of character with him, but we don't know him, and do we really want to know
him?
We
do have enough of a richness of character to realize it's like, there are some people that are unredeemable. Even with the richness of character you're getting with Gerber, it's like, you got to think about it this way, though, too. if he was that terrible, I shouldn't say that terrible, but if there was not some deeper purpose to him, Philippe would have found a way to get rid of him a long time ago just for sniffing around mate.
Yeah, it's true. So, I don't know. I also wonder how much Philippe is tempered by Isabeau, because he indulges her so much where it's like,
yes. Yeah. And I'm starting to wonder if like mom, like son, as far as judgment goes sometimes though too, because it's like, she was palling around with him for a long, long time. And to me, that just tells me she's not the best judge of character.
And Philippe, let's talk about blinded by love. I mean, Philippe loved her so much where he gave her so much rope versus he wouldn't have put up with that from
anyone else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
you have to even wonder if he had a different mate, say, you know, Eleanor of Aquitaine type mate. They were such good friends while she lived. It's like she's equally formidable, but I think Isabeau comes with a whole baggage compartment full of baggage.
I don't know. Maybe he was just Captain Save-A-Ho in that moment and she can do no wrong, you know?
Yeah.
You never heard Philippe described as Captain Save-A-Ho before. Now you have.
And somehow I think James Purfoy may enjoy that. He will find the humor in that.
Okay. So my last thought. Hey, guys, if you like this show, leave us a review. It's been a little while.
Yeah.
Our egos are melted a little bit. And we got to keep Angela fresh on the vine, all right?
Yes.
I remember somebody asking in an email that we haven't read out loud, but it was a passing thing. It's like, what do you mean by keep Angela alive? And keeping Angela alive, Angela is fueled by certain things. And we know this. Gene and I know this. But Angela likes the gift of the chase. She's always on the hunt, right?
Mm-hmm,
and it feels like a big catch when we get a review and she gets excited. And give us a good review, guys.
Keeps me alive. I might go on Matthew and be like, I know you don't want me in your presence anymore because we don't have any more 5-star reviews. I'm nothing.
That's what we mean. By keeping Angela alive, it keeps her cheered. You know, it's like everybody has love languages. I think Angela's is good reviews.
Yes.
Yes. It's also kind of like Tinkerbell, too.
Yes.
Yes, correct.
That's how Tinkerbell kept alive. You know, a little bit of clapping. We got to clap and keep Angela alive. Me, I don't know. Me and Gene will talk anyway. We don't care.
Yeah.
But Angela. Angela likes a little push. And,
she likes
to provide
positive
it for her.
Reinforcement.
Exactly.
So you can actually, there's several ways you can leave a good review. You can hit us up on Podchaser. I will leave a link in the show notes if you don't have an Apple Podcast app. Or those of you on Apple Podcasts, leave us a 5-star or a 4-star. Anything less than that, then, you know, I'll read it, but we're probably going to talk about you.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to 1-star us for all the dick jokes, we'll take it.
We'll take it. We'll read it. And we'll probably make fun of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we love it. We love it. Unfortunately, Spotify and Google Podcasts and all of them, I think Stitcher has reviews, but Spotify and Google Podcasts, they don't provide that same thing. So, you know, I will provide another way for you guys to give us a good review, and that's Podchaser. It takes a minute to start an account and put a good review up for us.
It's kind of like the podcast version of Goodreads.
Goodreads, yeah.
Yeah.
So I'll put that up for you. And thanks for sticking with us, guys.
Yes,
thanks for listening to us and to our patrons. We'll be with you soon because we're about to do the after show. And that's going to be today is the 18th of July. You can think about the things that are happening in the news. And I have shit to say. But I'll save it for the after show, guys. All right. So let's say goodbye, everybody. Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody. Demon kiss.
We'll talk to you in a fortnight.